I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. On the show today, we will discuss meningitis. The World Health Organization says COVID-19 has disrupted necessary vaccination campaigns, leading to a resurgence of deadly meningitis in Africa. Meningitis is caused by inflammation of the membranes surrounding the brain and spinal cord. It is often due to a viral or bacterial infection. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the U.S. CDC, viral meningitis is the most prevalent and least dangerous type of meningitis. The Africa CDC reports that meningococcal meningitis, caused by a bacteria, is most prevalent in the meningitis belt of sub-Saharan Africa, stretching from Senegal in the west to Ethiopia in the east. Around 30,000 cases are reported each year in the area. The WHO and partners have launched a roadmap to stop by 2030 bacterial meningitis outbreaks in Africa. Take a listen.
The World Health Organization says people are at risk of meningitis outbreaks because vaccination campaigns have been disrupted due to COVID-19.
The COVID-19 pandemic has delayed vaccination campaigns targeting more than 50 million African children, raising the risk that these gains will be reversed.
The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention says meningitis is an inflammation of the protective membranes covering the brain and spinal cord. A bacterial or viral infection of the fluid surrounding the brain and spinal cord usually causes the swelling. However, injuries, cancer, certain drugs, and other types of infections also can cause meningitis. Observers note that meningitis had been eliminated in Africa over a decade ago, after the deployment of the MenAfriVac vaccine. However, some outbreaks have been reported in 7 countries since 2013.
WHO in the African region launched an ambitious new strategy, the Regional Framework to Defeat Meningitis by 2030. One of its priority interventions is the rollout of a next-generation vaccine that has been shown in clinical trials to be safe and effective against multiple forms of meningitis.
This vaccine holds the promise of finishing what MenAfriVac began, or such that Africa may be the first continent to be free of meningitis epidemics.
Dr. Moeti says the new framework aims to deploy the new vaccine in all 26 of the meningitis belt countries between 2023 and 2030, with the goal of 90% coverage. She also says the WHO does plan to have this vaccine pre-qualified by the end of next year.
Dr. Matabogolo Boaz Masalu is an internal medicine specialist at the Dodoma University in Tanzania. He discusses prevention and treatment of meningitis.
The infection comes through the respiratory mechanism, but it goes directly to the central nervous system where it affects the brain and especially the spinal cord. It used to be prevalent before the vaccine, as a preventive way of controlling meningitis, especially in children. The pneumococcal and Haemophilus influenza type B vaccine, the streptococcal pneumonia vaccine and the Haemophilus influenza vaccine. So it's not that much common, but when it comes, it causes a critical condition. So in epidemics, there is a need of combating meningitis urgently because it may cause death in most of the population. There are several causes of meningitis: bacteria, virus, fungal, but the deadly meningitis is the bacteria one. But we use multiple approach when managing meningitis by using the broad spectrum antibiotics and also the dehydration by giving fluid and the other supportive management if a patient is having maybe convulsions or have lost consciousness. We have a multiple approach in managing a patient with meningitis. Usually, the epidemics happens in an overcrowded area, like maybe the refugee camps. When it happens, we advise people to avoid the overcrowded areas. But the most advisable way of preventing meningitis, especially in children, is by using the vaccine. In the adult, we also advise people to attend the clinics because most of the adults who are affected by meningitis are usually immunocompromised. So whenever they are vigilant to medication and they have viral circulation, they are taking regularly the medication, so they can be in a safe way of not able to be affected by meningitis. The bacterial meningitis is the one which is deadly, and also the fungal infection, like in HIV patient, is deadly. So whenever patient feel unwell by the symptoms, a headache, fever, neck stiffness, or have seizures, convulsions, so they have to seek for health care so that they can be managed.
That was Dr. Matabogolo Boaz Masalu, an internal medicine specialist at the Dodoma University in Tanzania, elaborating on meningitis. Now, Russia's war on Ukraine has seen scores of hospitals and clinics bombed and frequent power cuts that can turn off life-saving machines. Medical aid groups are using a Kenyan company's breathing device for premature babies that works without electricity, helping save vulnerable newborns in countries affected by conflict. Victoria Amunga reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
At this newborn intensive care unit in Kisumu, Kenya, nurses keep a close watch on at least a dozen babies who need oxygen support. Staff at the Jaramogi Oginga Odinga Teaching and Referral Hospital say this device brings some relief to those in respiratory distress, like this six-month-old baby. The device is a bubble continuous positive airway pressure system, or BCPAP.
It has helped us a great lot because before we had the machines, there were babies who needed the CPAP, but we were not able to initiate. We were just using the normal oxygen. Yeah, but currently we have seen that there are babies who improve very well when we initiate on CPAP.
The device continuously delivers pressurized oxygen, making it easier for babies in respiratory distress to breathe. The device is being manufactured in Kenya. Reviral Healthcare, a manufacturer in Kenya's Kilifi County, and the U.S.-based Vayu Global Health Foundation took on mass production of the devices this year. Officials say bubble CPAP just needs a pressured source of oxygen, such as a cylinder, to function.
So once you have a continuous flow of 100% pure oxygen flowing in, the blender, which is the magic of the entire device and is literally where the magic happens, is able to pull in ambient air from the outside as well. You can then adjust this oxygen concentration between 30% to 100% before being delivered to the baby. This blended air can be filtered, is humidified, breathed in by the patient, and breathed out. And then is also, there's a pressure generator jar which controls the pressure and keeps the baby's lungs open.
Newborns are bearing the brunt of at least 400 attacks on hospitals in Ukraine, according to the World Health Organization. Officials say the device provides a non-invasive way of supporting newborns who are struggling to breathe. Doctors say oxygen blenders prevent lung and brain damage while giving babies pure oxygen.
People actually need to make budgetary commitments, and it means that health systems have to prioritize babies. I have found in my 2.5 decades of work on maternal health that there's sometimes a lot of talk around saving a mother's life, but at the end of the day, people aren't oftentimes willing to put finance behind saving a mother's life.
The BCPAP devices are available at a cost of $400 in Kenya. The system is being used in at least 20 countries in Africa, as well as Belgium and the United States. Nearly 1 million infants die annually from respiratory problems in low- and middle-income countries, according to the WHO. Advocates say more of the life-saving machines are needed around the world.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It is time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. We turn now to medical brain drain. The World Health Organization recommends one doctor per 1,000 people. However, Africa has about one doctor for every 5,000 people, according to experts. Brain drain is one of the reasons behind the health workers' shortage, according to experts. Higher salaries and better working conditions are some incentives that lead some of Africa's medical workers to migrate to more developed countries. In Nigeria, Syria, thousands of doctors leave every year to Europe, North America, and the Middle East due to poor salaries, benefits, and working conditions back home. Nigerian health authorities are promising to improve compensation to stop the country's medical brain drain. But as Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja, it may not be enough.
We didn't have the materials we needed to work with, so you would see people die from preventable diseases.
Nigerian Dr. Chiemezie Ibe recalls the poor state of Nigeria's health system. When he got an offer to work in Britain 2 months ago, he took it.
I left because I got frustrated. I worked in an environment where, for the first 4 months of my employment, I was owed. And in these 4 months, I had bills to pay, I had responsibilities to meet up to, I had to be at work every day.
Dr. Ibe is among the some 2,000 doctors Nigeria loses every year to better paying jobs abroad, according to the country's National Medical Association. Countries such as Britain, the United States, Saudi Arabia, and Canada are prime destinations. The association says poor funding, frequent strikes, overpay, and unfavorable government policies for the health sector are to blame for the medical brain drain. Money is not the only factor driving health professionals abroad, as Nigerian optometrist Ifeanyi Ugeni explains.
I want to practice in an environment where I have basically all diagnostic tools at my disposal.
Payment disputes between the government and medical practitioners have continued for years and led to strikes, the latest being the National Association of Resident Doctors strike, which was suspended early this month, more than 2 months after it began. Nigeria's Medical Association blames the migration for Nigeria's falling doctor-to-patient ratio. But some doctors like Blessing Okubo refuse to leave.
Which I have had several opportunities to work abroad, but I still chose to strengthen my country and strengthen the health sector.
This month, Nigerian authorities promised to increase pay in a bid to retain physicians. But medical expert Ejike Oji says a broader approach is needed to ensure Nigerian doctors stay.
But our healthcare system is so broken that we need a lot of resources. And we need a lot of transparency and accountability to make use of even the little that we want to put in it.
Until then, thousands of Nigerian health professionals will continue trying to get a job abroad. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
For more on medical brain drain in Africa, I spoke with Adebusuyi Adeyemi, Fellowship Director at Chatham House Universal Health Center in England. Take a listen.
Adebusuyi Adeyemi, thank you so much for joining us on Voice of America.
Thanks for having me.
Talk to us about medical brain drain and the scope of the problem on the African continent.
Medical brain drain has a significant impact on healthcare systems across Africa, because the clinicians and healthcare professionals, healthcare workers that you would expect to be available to treat people with infectious diseases, to treat people with non-communicable diseases, is absent. And so public health threats can increase, communities don't get the healthcare that they need because their doctors and nurses aren't around to treat them. Medical brain drain is a big challenge because it's the lack of investment, it's the lack of funding that the healthcare workers need that means that they have to look for other means to make a living. There is also a little bit of a moral hazard on other countries in the West that invite those healthcare workers on, but they also have patients, they have citizens who need healthcare. And if they have the funds and we live in a free market economy, then they can put job offers out and it is then on the individuals to whether they accept or whether they apply for that. It's very incredibly difficult to put any rules and to limit restrictions on people's movement as any individual would want to make a living. So it's really more money, more investment that's needed to attract and retain healthcare workers in African member states. And so more needs to be done perhaps on treasuries and the budgets that's devoted to healthcare across African member states.
What are some of the main causes of medical brain drain in Africa? What can you tell us?
One of the main causes is funding, really. You can imagine yourself as a doctor or as a nurse, as a clinician in an African healthcare system. And if you aren't being paid or if you think you can get a better offer somewhere else, basic human nature would dictate that you would move to make sure you had a living. And the lack of investment in some of these African healthcare systems then means that the doctors and nurses don't get the wages that they deserve, that they think they deserve. And so they will move to other job opportunities where they can get an income and where they can also use their skills. Because if you are a doctor or a nurse and you aren't practicing over time, you will lose that skill which you originally trained for.
There are two types of brain drain, as far as I see. There are health workers who are already trained and leave the country for greener pastures, if you will. And then there are those who are traveling abroad to study but do not return. To what extent are the reasons, the causes the same, and what can be done for each group?
Yeah, the causes for medical brain drain, whether they're for people that have trained in a country and stay there, or whether they're for people that have been trained locally in their African country and then are, you know, recruited to other healthcare systems. They're slightly the same. There's lots of overlap. However, there's lots of nuance and lots of different things between one region, one country, and even within a country, within districts, why people move. Some might be due with age, some might be due with clinical competency. Again, if you're a clinician or a surgeon who's trained in a particular space and you don't have the infrastructure, you don't have the tools to actually use your skills, then you will go to other places where they have the medical equipment. So the bottom line, unfortunately, is money. As with any employment markets, as with any migration pathway, economic migration, people move to areas of work where they can use their skills, where they can earn a living. It always pretty much boils down to money. The hearts and minds of many nurses and doctors across Africa is that they want to stay. People don't want to leave their families. They don't necessarily always want to move away from where they're from. But if they can earn a better living elsewhere, then they will have to. It's probably the most sensible thing that they can do.
There are some humanitarians that say that the exodus of medical doctors, healthcare workers from Africa to other countries, more developed countries, is to some extent immoral. Do they bear some responsibilities in terms of staying on the continent to be part of strengthening the health system? Or are they right to travel abroad if things are not better in the country?
When it comes to the question of what is right or wrong for a doctor or nurse to do, for an African doctor or nurse to do, it's very hard and it's very challenging to suggest that it's immoral for them to move to get a better living for themselves. I think you would be very hard pressed to ask a nurse who isn't earning a decent living, who isn't earning the wage he or she thinks she deserves in an African country, to stay there for a patriotic, nationalistic sense of pride when they don't have the money to put foods in the mouths of their children or their families. And faced with the alternative of having a stable income from another country that can guarantee that, it's a basic human need for warmth, for food, for clothing. And so if feelings of morality, if feelings of serving your country could pay the bills, could get you food, then I'm sure people would obviously stay in the country. But the reality is it doesn't. It's hard cash and dollars and cents that pay the bills, that pay for food. And so people are pressed, unfortunately, put into situations where they have to find a way to make an economic living. So sense of immorality and what's right are unfortunately very well-meaning sentiments that don't change the situation for individual doctors and nurses who are faced with the reality of strikes, of not getting paid on time, et cetera.
So the WHO says that Africa is one of the regions that holds the highest burden of disease with the least doctor per population. What must be done?
Yeah, it's an age-old question of how to solve such a complex problem of medical brain drain, of investment into African healthcare systems. I think one of the interesting paradigms shifts in the way that we view this problem could be perhaps to think about the affordability of healthcare services. So rather than thinking about national healthcare systems protecting other countries from public health threats, from pandemic threats, you know, there's a term that says global health security. So rather than viewing it as protecting the world from African diseases or et cetera, maybe there's a conceptual view about how can we make services more affordable for the majority of Africans, and that's through healthcare insurance, that's through universal health coverage. And it needs a more persuasive, a more visionary view about healthcare in Africa, about what it means to have universal health coverage in Africa. It means how political leaders view the healthcare delivery for their citizens. And until we have that shift with leaders at the very top, who will then talk to their finance ministers, who talk to their treasury ministers, who will then provide that right funding, that right taxing infrastructure, I think we'll always be encountering this problem where the money isn't there to pay healthcare workers to be around to deliver healthcare, and we see this unfortunate medical brain drain. It is possible. It just requires individual leadership and vision to work towards these things, and we do see it in parts across of Africa. We just need to see more of it.
Adebusuye Adeyemi, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
That was Adebusuye Adeyemi, Fellowship Director at Chatham House Universal Health Center.
For 14 years, Malawi's celebrated midwife, Charity Salima, has delivered 12,000 babies with no fatalities. This is a rare development in a country with high mortality and neonatal mortality rates. Josephine Chinele in Lilongwe, Malawi, has more.
It is 8 a.m. on a Monday morning, and 63-year-old Charity Salima is already at her clinic, Ashikondi Women's Clinic, ready and hopeful to deliver healthy babies. Most of the women here cannot afford transportation to the district's major public health facilities, Bwaira and Kamuzu Central, let alone pay for their maternity services at private hospitals. Situated in the slum township of Area 23 in Malawi's capital city, Lilongwe, the clinic has served surrounding needy women with maternity services with no fatalities for 14 years, courtesy of Salima's care and dedication. After she retired from the public service in 2006, she says she thought of doing something to appreciate her community.
I have stayed in this community for such a long time. Now then, women knew that there was a midwife here, and sometimes they could come at night to say, you know, can you help us? They could knock at the doorstep. Then I thought this was a calling for me to do something for the community. And I think one thing which inspired me was, like, for me to be what I am, the community has done something for me. So I thought this was one way of giving back to the community where I belong. So what I could give back was the services which I know to my best. And then another thing which motivated me was, like, we always say, what does the government do? What will the government do? Now, as a citizen, you also need to help the government to do whatsoever you are supposed to do, depending on your skills. So the only thing I thought was to do what I can manage with the latest. Again, I'm also a woman. I thought, what is it that I should give back to my fellow women in this community?
Malawi's maternal mortality rate is at 439 deaths per every 100,000 live births. Neonatal mortality rate is at 26 per every 1,000 live births. But Salima has gone against all odds and managed to deliver 12,000 babies with no fatalities. Her clinic also provides antenatal and postnatal care. She manages this with the limited resources her clinic has.
Just by the grace of God. And then again, as a midwife, you need to have eyes to see, you need to have nose to smell, and you need to have ears to hear. That is to say, always make sure, you know, we are guided by our the labor graph, which tells us to say, by this time, this lady should deliver. If at that time the lady doesn't deliver, it means maybe the passage is not conducive for the passenger. So you need to refer as soon as possible. And then if you see that this one, I cannot manage to deliver, you refer as soon as possible.
Togozani Piri, a health surveillance assistant who plays multiple roles as assistant pharmacist and data entry clerk, says the majority of the people the clinic serves are needy people who cannot afford to pay for maternity services.
Panali kusoi ya kungawe, kwa nukrenda ni volunteer. There was a gap in terms of getting vaccines for under 5 clinic. I work as a volunteer. She needed someone to run around for her. She had no people to work with at the beginning. I started in 2008 when she was opening this clinic. We started together. We managed to do this work because we are dedicated to do this. Women that are assisted here are the mostly needy. Others deliver, they have bills to cover but can't afford to pay for them. They come here because the labor started in the night and they can't reach Bwaira Hospital because of the condition of the patient. They just come here. So it becomes difficult for the women to pay for the services received. They have limited resources because many are needy women from villages, because we are surrounded by many village communities, so it's hard. We receive a lot of women, even those that come for antenatal care and deliveries are many.
Ashikondi Clinic mostly runs on well-wishers' support. Former President Joyce Banda is one of the people who have supported Ashikondi Clinic. Freedom from Fistula Foundation and George Watson College have also supported the clinic. Salima is a highly celebrated midwife in Malawi. In 2019, she received Commonwealth Points of Light Award from the late Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth of England. In 2020, President Lazarus Chakwera honored Salima with a Midwife Lifetime Achiever Award. In Lilongwe, Malawi, I'm Josephine Chinere for VOA News.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For more health news and medical breakthroughs, visit voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Linoch Mudu in Washington, with producer Mukbil Yabaru. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Is Heidi Adams, host of Straight Talk Africa. Join me to explore what is now and what is next for African society, culture, and politics. We'll go behind the headlines to analyze the news and emerging trends shaping Africa today. Straight Talk Africa, every Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat.
African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at